Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. Just want to give a quick note before we start today's show. So last week, obviously, there was not an episode, but we had recorded one. It's the one you're about to hear, and we're about to kind of hit publish, and then the news broke about the Queen's passing. So out of respect, we held off, but just wanted to let you all know that that is why there was no episode last week. But we did record an episode. We're about to play it for you right now, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. But just wanted to kind of keep you guys in the know about why we didn't show up last week, and that is why. But anyhow, this is a really good episode, and now we're back, so let's get to it.
Yo, technology, what is it all about?
You know, I'm a 5'7" Indian man who's slightly overweight, so I've been used to hearing no's for most of my life, usually in the romantic sense. So, you know, it's not that hard for me when I go to fundraise. I just think about my teens and 20s, so it's not bad.
Hello and welcome to Danny in the Valley, your weekly dispatch from behind the scenes and inside the minds of the top people in tech. I am your host, Danny Fortson, the West Coast correspondent for the Sunday Times. And this week, we have a very fun guest to talk about a very unfun subject, which of course is cancer. But don't worry, this is a good, positive, hopeful episode. So on the show, we have Anand Parikh. He is the co-founder and CEO of a company called Fife Therapeutics, which is super interesting. So what they're doing is using nutrition to treat cancer. Now, before you're like, yeah, sure. Trust me, I had the same response. I too was skeptical. But the team at Fife is really unimpeachable. They have a whole bunch of the world's most respected cancer researchers who have dedicated their lives to developing drugs to treat this horrible disease, and the conclusion that they all reached independently long before they came together to start Fife was that nutrition, particularly metabolism and how we metabolize certain amino acids, etc., plays a huge role in how cancer spreads and is fueled. Now, the one case that this immediately brought to mind was, of course, Steve Jobs, who very famously sought to treat his pancreatic cancer through natural means, basically through diet, etc., and that didn't work. Of course, he did end up getting surgery, but, you know, it didn't obviously save his life. But anyway, Fife this summer raised nearly $50 million, and they're embarking on several clinical trials to show that if you starve the body of certain amino acids, it can indeed slow, stop, or even reverse tumor growth. It's really extraordinary. So it's a way to kind of supercharge the other treatments you might be having and make sure they actually really do the work that they're supposed to do and then some. So it's a really big idea. You know, if it works, it opens a whole new waterfront in terms of how we think about and treat cancer. So it's a big idea. There's some very wildly credible people behind it, led by Anand, who now has this money to go out and prove that the thesis actually works in real life. So that's what you're going to hear right now. Anand also has a really fun backstory of how he ended up running this company. And lastly, before we get to the show, just a brief programming note. I am not very smart, so I forgot to press play for like the first 7 minutes of our conversation. My audio just isn't quite as good as normal, but then I realized the error of my ways. I pressed record, so that kicks in around 7-8 minutes, and then that's the rest is as normal as you might expect. So with that, I now hand you over to my conversation with Anand Parikh, the co-founder and CEO of Fife Therapeutics. Enjoy. Well, look, thank you for taking the time. I think what you guys are doing obviously is going to be of interest to, I'm going to guess, every single listener, because we all have a loved one or a friend or somebody who has suffered from cancer. And so I'd love to just, if you could just give kind of high level what it is you guys are doing, because I think it's a really interesting idea, and then we can get into a bit of the science and kind of where you are as a company.
Yeah, absolutely. So what Fife does is we really focus on uncovering the fourth pillar of cancer care. So currently, if you have cancer, there's only three ways you can get treated, and that's surgery, radiotherapy, so x-rays, or drugs.
Which is chemo, basically, right?
Which is chemo or targeted therapies, so right. Drugs that hit particular oncogenic mutations. But why can't we leverage nutrition like we do in many other diseases, everything from diabetes to pediatric epilepsy to autoimmune conditions? Why can't we use precision nutrition to help treat cancer? And, you know, my co-founders are some of the world's greatest cancer biologists who were all developing drugs and have spent their lives developing drugs to help patients with cancer and basically realized that we can and we should be using precision nutrition to treat cancer. And by not doing so, we're making our drugs a lot less effective.
So my initial kind of knee-jerk reaction is like, oh yeah, well, nutrition, you can like, you know, help treat cancer by kind of eating better or eating differently. On one level, it's like, yeah, I think I'm on board with that. And then another level, you're like, this sounds like some Instagram quacks, you know,
yeah.
You know, like, oh, you just totally. need to eat a week of goji berries and then your brain cancer will disappear.
Yeah, eat ashwagandha and spin around in a circle three times is my favorite one. But I think that's so much of what the science has been. And what we're trying to do is really bring the rigor that you bring with drug development, but bring it to precision nutrition. So we're doing these trials with very specific combinations. You know, we're not talking about ashwagandha or eat a diet only of green vegetables or something like that.
Yeah.
We're talking about very specific micronutrients that tumors are reliant upon to grow and to spread. So we're really talking about starving the tumor of very specific things that it needs.
And what is it in terms of like what that looks like on a practical level? Is that like you're just taking a pill that is like has certain nutrients or does not have certain nutrients, or do you stop eating certain things, or is a little bit of everything? Like, what is that? If this becomes a treatment, what does that look like?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. So we have precision nutrition, we have drugs, and we have an application, so software. And we wrap all of them together in a unified package, and it basically gives the patient exactly what they need to be successful.
Right, right. But is that like, as you say, it's not like eating greens necessarily. But so like, if you're talking about micronutrients, I'm just trying to understand what that actually looks like with like, you know, if I have a cancer and I, you know, I'm using you guys to help fight this cancer, what does that actually look like?
So for example, in one of our programs, we're trying to deplete serine, glycine, and proline. Okay. So serine, glycine, and proline are three out of the 20 amino acids. And the way we deplete three amino acids is we essentially have a real food component to our intervention. So it's real food that you would recognize, but we take out all of the protein. All of the protein is gone.
Oh, wow.
And then we give you a sachet of amino acids that contains all of the amino acids other than serine, glycine, and proline, and some other ones that can interconvert. But that's really what we do. And it's very simple for the patient. The patient gets all the food shipped to them, to their door. It's kind of like a meal delivery service in that way. And then they take these amino acid powders in about 8 to 12 ounces of water 4 to 5 times a day. Mm. And they do this for several days a week, overlaid very exactly with their chemotherapy. They have access to our software, which reminds them when to eat, gives them access to a registered dietitian who will talk to them and help them with, you know, any issues they may face. And then they take their drugs as directed by their oncologist as well. And so that's the package for the patient.
I see.
Yeah.
And is there, I mean, have you had any indications in the clinic or otherwise that would be like, oh, this actually long-term could be, you know, once we get this really dialed in, like an alternative to chemo? Because obviously when people think of cancer, they think of chemo, they think of, you know, you lose all your hair, you're wildly sick. It's just like this horrendous experience. Is that a possibility or no?
So right now we're pairing it together with chemo. So if you're going to go through this horrible process of losing your hair, feeling very nauseous all the time, then you might as well get the maximal benefit that you possibly can out of it,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how we're treating it today. But in future, there is the possibility that even for cancers where chemo doesn't work, that maybe we're able to help. You know, in some of our programs that we're looking at, one of our drugs is being paired with the diet. And these are for patients who have already failed on chemotherapy. Mm. So their tumor is not responding to chemotherapy.
I see. So can we go backwards? So how did you get here to doing this, starting a company and starting a company, you know, focusing on the nutritional aspect of cancer treatment in particular?
Okay, so let me start at the very beginning. So yes. I was born in North London.
Which part of North London? That's where I lived when I was there.
Oh, so I grew up in a very boring part of North London called Hillingdon.
Oh, yeah, okay. My first place, I was in Tufnell Park for many years.
Yeah, that's much cooler. You know, we're sort of, if you get to, my dad owned a shop in Ickenham. We lived in Hillingdon. And yeah, sort of grew up always loving science. I always thought I was going to be a doctor, like, you know, all the other good brown kids.
Yep.
And then ended up, when we moved to the US, which was about when I was 16 or 17, ended up studying biology, then going to work in politics, and became a lawyer for various reasons.
Oh, wow. So many questions. How did you end up going to just moving, if your dad had a shop, how'd you end up moving to America?
So unbeknownst to me, when I was a year old, my dad had applied for the diversity lottery. So this is a lottery that you can apply for a green card for. Most people don't apply because it takes 15 years to get a green card. My dad did it when I was one and sort of forgot about it. And then one day when I was 16, he said, Anand, we're moving to America. And I said, what? And he said, we're moving to America. And we're moving to suburban Detroit. And all I knew about Detroit was, you know, I was thinking bulletproof vests and
totally.
Just knew nothing about it. It turns out it's fine. It's a nice place to grow up. But so his sister had lived in Detroit and my mom's brother lived in Chicago. And so we picked the Midwest.
Wow.
There you go. So Michigan. And then studied political science and biology there. I was going to go to med school, as I mentioned. And then worked in politics. Saw that more of the people who were doing the things that I wanted to do were lawyers versus doctors. Yeah. And so I sort of applied to law school, went to law school, graduated with a ton of debt, and worked at a large law firm doing soul-crushing work for a while.
This is what my wife did as well.
There you go.
She worked at Covington and Burling in DC. And every 6 minutes, you got to, you know, account for your time and the billing and all the, it's like a very difficult sausage machine to exist in.
It is a very, I love that.
Just grinds you up.
It just grinds you up. So anyway, so I'm at this large law firm. I remember I got a review one year that said, we love you. Clients love you, you do great work, but you take too much initiative. And I just thought, oh my God.
Interesting.
Yeah, they didn't like that. They didn't like that I was emailing clients to say like, hey, was what I gave you what you needed? Is there anything else? Sending emails without checking with the more senior people.
Thought, not respecting the hierarchy.
Yeah, not respecting the hierarchy. And I just thought, not right for me. And then I joined a very small company. I decided to jump in at a company of three people. And what that company did was it used a ketogenic diet to treat diabetics.
Wait, hold on. So you're doing like, I presume, corporate law.
Yes, yes.
Like, you know, really exciting, exhilarating stuff, I'm sure. So how do you go from like working at a corporate law firm, I imagine making, you know, very healthy money to joining a three-person startup and doing ketogenic? Do you have some kind of interest, like personal interest here? Like how did that's a big leap.
I said that I'm looking for anything that will essentially allow me to use my initiative, not try to stifle it. And apparently three-person startups that have no money in the bank will take almost anyone, especially if you're willing to work for a pittance. So I basically, God, every trapping of, a new lawyer's lifestyle, I had to get rid of in very short order. So the wine clubs, the nice shoes got sold, the gym membership went, everything went, downsized the apartment.
Wow.
And decided to start working at this company. And
yeah, it was like a cleanse, it sounds like.
It was a cleanse. It was great. It was actually really great because I grew up pretty sort of working class, pretty poor.
Yeah.
And, you know, first time making some money, you sort of enjoyed all the trappings of that. And then very quickly I had to let go of it all and I realized that I could. So that was good to learn about myself.
Right.
And I never want those trappings again. But so I'm working at this small company. I get introduced to a friend of mine who is a venture capitalist. He was someone who I was introduced to through another person. I was basically just going around to everyone saying, do you know somewhere that will take me and will allow me to learn how to build a company?
Yeah.
And one Sunday, this friend sent me an email saying, hey, this guy's starting a company using a ketogenic diet to treat diabetics. Do you want to talk to him? And he could have said, this guy's building, you know, kennels to house bats. And I probably would have said, sure.
Like, that sounds great.
Let's have a conversation. But I talked to him. He was an incredible guy. He is an incredible guy. He's my CEO there. A guy called Sami Inkinen is a Finnish guy. So I worked with Sami for about 4 years and I started off moving boxes, helping us move offices. I did all the setting up payroll, all the sexy, unglamorous work, all the very unsexy, unglamorous work. And then ended up being the CFO there, ran legal, finance, and HR, sold our first client. I'd never sold, you know, a biscuit in my lifetime. And then suddenly I was selling, you know, multi-million dollar contracts to large insurance companies and learned how to do that and just had a great time. And then wasn't planning on going anywhere. We were actually expecting our first child and a venture capitalist reached out to me and asked me to go invest for him. Apparently someone had said nice things about me and he said, I want you to come work for me. This guy's name's Vinod Khosla.
I know that guy.
Yeah, there you go.
He's reasonably well known out in these parts.
He's reasonably well known out in these parts. That's right. And I said no, thank you to Vinod. I don't want to invest. Right. I like building things. You know, on my spare time, I like doing carpentry. I like seeing something come up from the ground that wasn't there before. So he said, okay, well, what do you want to do? I said, I want to have a big impact on a big problem. And he said, how's cancer? I said, big problem. And he introduced me to my co-founders. We were a bunch of scientists who'd come to him looking for money. And originally they wanted to start a meal delivery company for cancer patients. And I said,
I see.
That's a horrible idea. I don't want to do that. But you've got some amazing science here. Let's figure out how we can scale the science and get it to patients. And, 2.5 years later, here we are running clinical trials in cancer patients, hopefully on the precipice of about to change the course of this disease.
And so can you talk about that group of scientists? Because I was looking at the roster and it is quite impressive. This isn't just like, you know, some Tom, Dick and Harry who like, yeah, I think we can come up with some, you know, a juice cleanse for cancer and it's going to be really great. It's just like, these are some of the most prominent people in their fields, no?
They absolutely are. These are some of the most prominent cancer biologists out there today. And how this came about is that all of these people were trying to essentially develop drugs. They were trying to develop cancer drugs that would help people live for longer. But then in the course of developing those drugs, they realized the drugs weren't working as well as they should. And that the underlying reason for that was the sort of overall metabolism of the organism. So essentially, some of these drugs, if you gave the drug, but the person taking the drug was eating a whole bunch of ice cream, you might as well not have given the drug.
Yeah.
And that's what they figured out. And they started saying pretty quickly, well, we can really start to target this using precision genomics to find a specific patient population, the specific intervention that's going to help that group of people. Because what people don't realize about cancer is that cancer is not just one disease. It's actually 1,000 diseases that are all very, very different, but just share two things: that the cells want to grow and the cells want to spread. That's about it.
Right, right.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I imagine there's a lot of breakthroughs, but was there one kind of landmark study that kind of showed like, oh, if you kind of quote, let's, you know, quote unquote, starve a tumor of X, Y, or Z, then you can slow its rate of growth by 50% or stop it or reverse it or something? Was there kind of a light bulb moment in this kind of field or in this particular science? Because as you say, when you think about cancer care, it's about kind of real, like industrial strength, drugs and chemo and really just kind of gnarly stuff like that. But I imagine if there was a study that showed like, if you change your intake of certain nutrients, this can also have a really significant impact.
It's interesting. There wasn't just one study. There was three of them, all done at the same time, all being published in a very highfalutin journal called Nature, all published between 2013 and 2018. And the people who were doing these papers all happened to know each other one way or the other. So one group was led by a scientist called Lou Cantley. And Lou is most well known for characterizing an enzyme called the PI3 kinase enzyme and that pathway. And Lou had basically shown that if you gave mice with a mutation in this PI3 kinase pathway an insulin-suppressing diet, that it made this drug 500% more effective.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yeah. And at the same time as Lou and Sid, Sid Mukherjee, Lou's co-collaborator, were showing that, Karen Valsden, who's actually the chief scientist of Cancer Research UK, down there at the Crick in London, and Oliver Maddox, who's a professor at the University of Glasgow, were doing work on amino acid deprivation. And so they showed that essentially starving some of these tumors of serine, glycine, and proline was a highly effective strategy that could cause mice to live for, you know, much, much longer, double their survival, essentially.
Right.
And then a third group was Greg Hannon and Scott Lowe, who showed they were trying to knock down a variety of genes. So silence genes that using CRISPR that were responsible for trying to figure out which genes were responsible for causing a tumor to metastasize, meaning spread, right? And they figured out that it was genes encoding for asparagine that did that. So these three groups all had these big aha moments, and they all happen to know each other. So Lou and Karen have been friends for decades. Greg technically works for Karen. And so they all kind of said, wait, you found this thing, I found this thing. And they decided to start a company, and that company's Vibe.
You said asparagine. I have no idea what that is.
Asparagine is one of the 20 amino acids.
Oh, I see. I see. So again, if you can kind of cut that out, that in certain cancers could be a very good thing.
Correct. It could prevent metastasis of breast cancer. So it could prevent breast cancer from spreading.
Right. So these are obviously all, you know, credentialed scientists, you know, in their fields. What is the view of the research? Because again, oftentimes when I'm writing about like biotech or companies that are trying to do something or take a different approach or a new approach, there's a lot of skepticism or even pushback. I'm just wondering kind of what the view is now of like this kind of nutrition-based approach to cancer. Is it kind of a wait and see? Or are people very excited about it? Is there a lot of skepticism? Kind of what's the situation?
So I think because of the caliber of scientists that are saying, look, there's a there,
yeah,
I actually think people are receptive to it. This is kind of different than my last company where, you know, the scientists are wonderful human beings and they were right that a ketogenic diet is probably one of the best ways to treat type 2 diabetics, but they just didn't have the visibility or the profile of some of the scientists that I'm working with now. And it definitely makes it a little bit easier when you're walking into an oncologist's office and say, you know, this is research by Lou Kentley or Karen Vousden. It definitely sort of makes people sit up. Whereas previously they might've thought, oh, this is going to be another ashwagandha story. But instead they're like, okay, let me actually be receptive to this and think about it.
Right, right. And so you're doing, you guys just raised, what is it, $47 million this summer?
That's right, yes.
And that is to do what? To fund, to get you through this clinical trial, I presume.
Yes, that money will allow us to do several clinical trials that ideally would prove the principle or at least lend further credence to the idea that this is possible in humans, right? Because until now, much of the research has been done in mice and in the lab, and now we're starting to do it in humans. A big first step for us, which we achieved within the last 12 months, is we've proven that we could actually change levels of these nutrients in humans. So for example, I talked about serine, glycine, and proline. We've now shown that in healthy volunteers and in cancer patients, we can drop levels of those nutrients low enough where it should be effective. So now the trick is to show it within a population of cancer patients for long enough where we can say, hey, you know, they did far better than they would have done were they on chemotherapy alone.
So what phase is it? Would this be a phase 2 trial then, what you're doing right now?
Yeah, it's an early phase trial. Phase 1 or phase 2 is the right way to think about it.
Right, right, right. And the phase 3 is proving the efficacy that this thing actually really works.
Correct.
Right. And I'm curious because, and I don't know if it's because these would have to be prescribed by a doctor, but it doesn't sound like you're inventing a drug. So do you need FDA approval?
Yeah, so eventually we will need FDA approval because if you want to say that something actually helps treat or prevent a disease, in order to make that claim, the FDA has to approve that. And so that's where we will want the FDA. And I think the other thing is, look, the FDA adds this imprimatur of scientific validity. People all over the world know those three letters, FDA. So, you know, the person who's telling you to eat goji berries and spin around in a circle three times isn't going to get the attention of the FDA. But if the FDA says, look, what Fight's doing is scientifically valid and can make a difference for people with pancreatic cancer or whatever cancer we're talking about, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's something that oncologists will listen to.
Right. Are you focusing on a particular cancer at the moment?
So we have a bunch of different sets of trials. So we have a trial involving an insulin suppressing diet together with a PI3 kinase inhibitor. And that's in mutant PI3 kinase endometrial, colorectal, and ovarian cancers. And then we also have a trial in pancreatic, colorectal, and rectal cancer. And that's involving a diet deplete of serine, glycine, and proline.
And is it too early to say, like, you know, if this works, you know, what it would do in terms of, I don't know, either extension of lifespan or health span or, you know, elimination of disease? Like, where is it on that spectrum?
So, look, with that first trial I mentioned, the cerebellosive trial, there has just been some data done by a group in South Dakota using that drug in a combination that's very similar to the one that we're testing. We didn't know anything about these guys doing it, but they used the drug. We had no idea. And they saw curative responses within some of these patients. So literally, patients who have failed on multiple lines of therapy. These are people who are sort of in a bad state with very few options, and they've cured them. Not everyone, but some of them they have cured.
Cured by basically starving the tumors of certain amino acids.
Well, this is the program that focuses on a PI3 kinase inhibitor together with an insulin suppressing diet. So that's the program where they actually put that together with some chemotherapy called paclitaxel, and they saw curative responses. Pretty amazing.
Wow. That's like the kind of the quote unquote miracles you hear about when somebody's like, everything's failed. Now it's just the kind of the death clock is ticking down.
I'll tell you, it's a tough disease. It's a tough prognosis for many of the patients that we are treating. Many of them, unfortunately, will pause. But it's data like that that gives you hope that we can really change the course of this disease. I mean, you know, when I'm having a tough day, I think about that. And I think about the person who's got that diagnosis. And it sort of will make you dig a little bit deeper. And I know my team feels the same way.
Right. And where are you based?
So I am currently based in Austin, Texas, but the company is based all over the globe. I like to say I'm a Londoner by birth and a Californian by soul, but I followed my wife down here who works for Tesla.
Oh, wow.
And so she moved down to Austin, and in order to save my marriage and not lose the best thing that's ever happened to me, I said, Lauren, I'll move down here too.
Right. So you guys are fully remote, it sounds like.
Fully remote. We have a lab in Cambridge in the UK, but otherwise we've got people from San Francisco to Stockholm.
How's that been? I was just like trying to manage that, you know, the kind of the herding cats problem. Or if it's, I don't know if it's a problem.
It hasn't been bad thus far. I think we've got a team of very motivated, mission-driven people who really care about what they do. So you don't need much sort of G-ing up. The team just wants to get on with it. We do get together once a quarter in person, and then we have lots of fun over Zoom as well. Happy hours and you know, lots of banter over Slack. So yeah. we have a good time.
Right. And so in terms of the timeline for you guys, what's the next big kind of date or data point you guys are working toward?
I'm hopeful that within the next sort of 12 to 18 months that we'll have data in humans that shows the magnitude of the response. And that I think we're sort of starting to see people's eyes opening slightly to this idea of precision nutrition of the fourth pillar of cancer. But I think it's going to be like three shots of espresso at 7 in the morning. It's really going to keep them awake, right?
Right.
They're going to start saying, wow, this is a real thing. And I'm hopeful that we'll have 100 other companies in space within the next few years, because we can't do it all if it's just us. I mean, there are thousands of companies developing cancer drugs, but we're the only one that I'm aware of that are developing cancer precision nutrition. And for us to achieve our mission of every cancer, every patient, I think we need many, many more people chasing after this.
Right. Because that's what I was going to ask, because that's kind of gets back to where we started, of this idea of like the whole idea of nutrition. Because, you know, like, I mean, you know, California, everybody's like, you know, food is like medicine, you know, man, you got body's a temple, all that stuff. But the idea that that could be like a scientifically credible and not only credible, but like vital approach to cancer does feel like it's still kind of, maybe you're not out in the wilderness because again, you have these scientists behind you, but it does still feel like a relatively fringe or new idea. Is that fair?
I think it is fair for cancer, but there's so many other diseases where we already know the power of precision nutrition. I mean, everything from, as I mentioned, my last company in diabetes or irritable bowel syndrome or pediatric epilepsy, ulcerative colitis, autoimmune disorders. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. We know how nutrition can impact these particular conditions. And so why should cancer be any different? I mean, I genuinely believe that even if we fail, even if Fife isn't the company that's going to find it, it will be. But even if we aren't, that someone else is going to come along and say, precision nutrition in cancer, boom, here you go. Like, it will happen. And in our lifetimes.
Right. Fife, what's up with the name?
So one of my co-founders, Oliver Maddox, is Welsh. And it's okay. The Welsh word for nutrient or metabolite.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm glad I asked.
There you go.
Because yeah. I was like, oh, I'm about to interview the CEO of Faith Therapeutics. But I was like, so when you said Fife, it kind of threw me for a loop a little bit.
You thought it was just some wonky corporate name that a branding agency had come up with.
I thought, well, you know, it's, yeah, you know, the Silicon Valley way, you have to, you just have to change the spelling of something and make it sound new.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a real word. You know, thank goodness it's not Llandudno or any one of those funny Welsh towns that he came up with. But short, sharp, even the mispronunciation is great because the mispronunciation is faith, which, yeah. Great word, right?
Totally.
Very applicable. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. What was your worst day of work?
At Fife or ever?
Ever.
I think my worst day of work was... At my last company, we had a very challenging HR situation, which, you know, was not of my making, but that I was overseeing. And it was just horrible, horrible to deal with, horrible to be a part of, horrible for the people that experienced it. That was really hard for me on a personal level because I think of myself as a person of high integrity, and just having to clean up some of that mess was challenging.
Yeah, managing people. It's tough.
Yeah. And, you know, I always say to people at Fife, the quickest way to get fired at Fife is to show a lack of respect for another human being who you work with. However that manifests.
Right.
That's the quickest way. You know, sometimes our jobs are difficult. Sometimes things get in the way. But there's just no reason for anyone to, I don't know whether I'm allowed to say this, but be an asshole.
Don't be an asshole.
Good life rule.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, it was Arianna Huffington who was on the Uber board who said, you know, I think at some point she's like, we just have to stop hiring assholes. It's like, you know, it's just a very simple kind of, you know, that's
yeah.
part of our problem.
I work really hard and it's fun to me when everyone comes along for the ride. And sure, not everyone is going to make it the entire way, but even if they can't, you can treat them with respect as you let them go. I don't think there's any need to be, you know, condescending, derisive, rude to people.
Yeah, yeah. Lastly, I forgot to ask, how was the fundraising process? Because you guys got some good, you got some like, you know, kind of blue chip names to back you. Was that a difficult process? Was that a, you know, a wall of no's and a couple of yeses? How'd that go?
Fundraising is always a wall of no's and a couple of yeses. Whoever tells you that it's not that is lying. That's always how it is. You just have to get used to being told no a lot of times. Now, you know, I'm a 5'7" Indian man who's slightly overweight. So I've been used to hearing no's for most of my life, usually in the romantic sense. So, you know, it's not that hard for me when I go to fundraise. I just think about my teens and 20s. So it's not bad.
That's not traumatizing. It's not triggering, as the kids say.
No, it's not triggering at all. Develop some thick skin, you know.
Awesome. Well, look, I think it's fascinating. I wish you guys all the luck because obviously it's a big problem you're tackling. And if there's a, yeah, if you guys can kind of open up an entire new way to treat this disease, that feels like, you know, that would be a game changer.
Yeah, thanks. We feel the same way. And we feel this moral imperative that if we can help people really extend their life or even cure them from this disease by using this very simple, or, you know, this relatively simple intervention that is available to everyone and everyone eats, if we can just change that and make it better, I think that's a win for humanity. That's how we think about it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I wish you all the luck, and we'll have you guys back on as things progress, for sure.
Thank you, Danny. Really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
And that is all the time we have. I want to thank Anand. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank producer Daisy for making it happen. And I have a request. Put in a review. Please. Do it for me. Or a rating. Or both. Tell a friend. Tell a neighbor. It really does help other people find the pod. Keeps me employed and paid, which I quite like. And yeah, thank you again for listening. We will be writing about Fife, I believe, this weekend in the Sunday Times, so do check that out. Pick up an actual physical copy of paper, pile of papers, or just go online, thetimes.co.uk. You can also find me on Twitter at Danny Fortson, or email me danny.fortson@sunday-times.co.uk. Have a fantastic week, and we'll talk to you very soon.